All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Canadians? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. I'm in Vancouver, Canada. I know I've been up here a lot lately. I'm going home in a couple days. You know, it's back and forth a bit, but I've been up here pretty steady. And as I reported on another day, things are going pretty good. I'm getting the hang of what is exciting about the job. And I hope that you can do that too with your job if possible. I'm just telling you what's going on with me. But right now, where am I at? Where are you at? How are you feeling? I feel okay in this moment. And hopefully it'll last a few more. It comes and goes. I am at the whims of my dopamine and neural pathways in terms of which ride do I choose to go on, if you know what I'm saying. But I just had this sandwich, and this is not even a plug because I don't even know what to tell you, really. Wasn't a complicated sandwich. I toasted up this. There's this pita bread that you can get, Angel brand. Oh, my God. It's the best. And I had an avocado that I didn't want to rot entirely. They always rot. I don't know. I buy them slightly hard, and I think, like, well, this will time out well. And then I just watch them turn into garbage or compost, depending on your ideological lean. But I made this avocado sandwich with toasted pita bread. I cut it open, spread the avocado on one side, and then a fan of mine, Shelly, gave me some S&B umami topping crunchy garlic with chili oil made in Japan. And this is basically chili crunch with these fried garlic slices in it. And I got to be honest with you. Look, I don't know how long it'll last in terms of how I feel this way. But right now, I just ate, and I'm talking like 12 minutes ago, one of the best things I've ever put in my fucking mouth. And those things are fleeting, and maybe it won't hold up. But I thought I'd share it with you, that I took a bite of this thing with the avocado on the sandwich, this crunchy garlic chili crunch, and holy shit. I'm trying to hold on to it, because that's what I think about a lot of the times, folks. When the world gets too large for me, I think about nicotine and food. Dan St. Germain is my guest today. He was on a live WTF like back in 2010, but he never did a full episode. And he's got this new special out called Dan St. Germain, Dance Fatty Dance. And I've known Dan a long time. He trudges the path as I trudge the path. And those of you who trudge the path know what I'm talking about. And, you know, we got into it. I've been talking to some people that do the trudging. Yeah, recovering people. Got a lot of interesting feedback about the Trey Anastasio episode. Fish fans, a very opinionated bunch. But I'll tell you one thing. Trey loved it. I'll tell you that. And he showed me a post on a board by a fan that he thought really got it. And 95-96% of them all seemed pretty excited about it. But the ones that don't, and the principles they have around fish and what it means to be a fish fan and their relationship with Trey, pretty interesting stuff. Fairly hostile bunch, some of them. But, you know, that's the same with any cult, right? So Dan St. Germain and I talk about drugs and alcohol, as did Trey and I. And I think it's interesting because somebody had posted a comment, you know, just sort of like, why all the drug talk? I don't do drugs. I don't talk about it. Okay. But let me tell you one thing I know, no matter how you stay sober or whatever you do to get there, it's fine. But when people that people look up to or have on a pedestal or respect talk about not doing drugs or alcohol or whatever it is that was destroying their life, it helps countless people. Countless. I can't even tell you if there's any effect that I can sort of register about what I do on this podcast and what I talk about. It's that people who are trying to stay sober off of one thing or another get a tremendous amount of inspiration when they hear people like myself or people I talk to talking about that. And I see it in the emails. I see it and hear it when people talk to me. So if there's anything I leave this world, if I can help somebody do that, that's a fucking miracle. A fucking miracle. And I've had fans who have gotten back to me after 10 years sober that said, 10 years ago, you threw the switch and I can't be any more of service than that in any more tangible way. So if anybody has a problem with talking about addiction or recovery because it's not their thing or they're doing just fine with it, can go fuck themselves. And I say that with love. I say it with total love. I also wanted to bring up, I just watched a special from a comedian who I've had on years ago. Very nice guy and a very solid, long-form comic. I haven't been in touch with him. I don't know what he's up to, but he did make a very pleasant and funny special with some edge and some heart. His name's Chad Daniels, and it's on Netflix. It's called Chad Daniels, Empty Nester, and you can stream that now. I was just watching it in my trailer, waiting to do the thing, and because I wanted to check in. I have time, and I watch comedy specials. I like to see what people are doing, but I know when they're good. And that Chad Daniels Empty Nester, that's a solid special. I'll be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on Friday, September 20th. Then I'm in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. A lot of dates coming up. Go to WTFpod.com for all those dates. And yeah. Oh, also, my HBO comedy special From Bleak to Dark is available as a digital download or as a vinyl EP. Yep. And the cover is solid. It's solid metal. You can get it on the homepage of WTFpod.com or go to craftrecordings.com and pick it up there. I get the vinyl just for the cover. Very happy with the cover. Many of you know the story behind the cover. It was the day I passed out on the top of the mountain and hit my face on the gravel. It's going to be a collector's item for those of you who give a shit. But right now it's not because there's still plenty left. I think I'm going to work out a deal with Kraft so I can I'll sign some and make those available. It's funny because I haven't really been pushing it that much because I forget about it. But it's a very nice recording, Kraft Recording. That company, Kraft Recordings, does a lot of great reissues and stuff. I'm happy with them. And I have many Kraft Recordings. They actually, I think they were the ones that did that Creedence Clearwater at Albert Hall box. That's fucking awesome. It's weird with the music. Huh? Because for some reason, I've just been listening to Metallica's first three records. I was never a Metallica guy, but the last two times I was at the gym, the three times maybe, I'm just plowing through those first three records and listening to some of them twice. I don't know what switched in my head, but I'm happy to announce that I'm now a 14-year-old boy in 1988. And apparently, I've been shutting that neural pathway down in terms of the possibility of releasing some of that juice through metal, and it's happening now. I'm 60. Look, so I've been talking pretty nicely, I think, about Canada, my feelings about it, and I admit it, I don't know much about what's going on up here, politically or otherwise, but I enjoy being here, and I enjoy sort of being out of the States a bit, and I don't think I've made any other implications other than, like, I'd like to live here, not because it doesn't matter what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that it was only a matter of time before one of my fans wrote me a very detailed email just about how fucking shitty Canada is on some levels. Inflation bad. There's a housing crisis. The cost of living is grossly incongruous with median wages, his words. Our leaders are in the pocket of retail and service conglomerates that monopolize the economy. I'm paraphrasing and also quoting him. Taxes are surging. Infrastructure weakening. And then even though I said no guns, but he brings up the worst, deadliest mass shooting in Canadian history took place right by his house. Oh, man. Jeez. And his point, he says, is it feels dire everywhere. Well, and then he points out that America has a definite influence on Canadian policies and culture and everything else. Wow, what a fucking buzzkill, man. I could have assumed that. You know, and he said, quote, "I know you've been conscious to acknowledge the limits of your Canadian expertise. I just wanted to offer feedback from a citizen who perceives it differently. It's not a pissing match," he says. "Canada simply can't be the American ideal or how things ought to be, and it can't be America's escape hatch." And then he says, after all of that, "I am genuinely thrilled to hear that your time in our country has been comfortable and comforting." Not anymore. Thanks, pal. I don't know if it's America's escape hatch. Might be mine. And I certainly didn't think it was the system that we need to have there. I wasn't saying that. Look, I'm 60. I'm just looking for a way to land this plane in a place that I feel peaceful and happy and I can breathe and my brain is clean, if that's possible. But thank you for all this information. I will never look at it through rose-colored glasses again. I will never romanticize Canada. I will not enjoy it the way I did before, and I certainly will not idealize it in any way. But bottom line, still no guns. Sorry about that one guy. And also, hardly anybody lives here. I hear you, but there's still a lot in the plus column. But you have dirtied my mind about Canada, so you've done what you set out to do. Now I know. Thank you, Colin. And this was not aggressive. And I know you're a fan. But thank you for the reality check, the total buzzkill, and for shifting my brain about loving your country. One other thing I want to hit, because something happened today. So, you know, I've got this Zyn problem, and I am a drug addict. Real deal. Real deal. And there are just moments where you realize, like, dude, however you're going to manage your dopamine, whatever you want to do, if that's your deal, managing dopamine, you know, there's a spectrum to it. There's some drug addicts around here that are very hardcore, smoking the fentanyl, smoking the meth, and just, you know, the amount of dignity surrendered to appease and get that thing met, to meet that particular Satan where he lives, so you can get that dopamine going. That is the far part of the spectrum, and it's ugly and sad. But I'll tell you, I'm on these Zyns, and I don't know if you guys know this. There's a Zyn shortage around the world. There's a lot of mythology around the Zyn shortage. You can't get the Zyns in America that easily. You can't get flavored ones in California at all because they're illegal. And up here, they're impossible to find. And I'm a little strung out. I'm a little strung out on them. I've got nicotine gum. I know what's going on. I've been here before. But what happened today is a new place for me. I met a comic. This dude, he lives here. And we were talking at one of the shows I did. He does morning radio here, too. His name's Alex Carr. And he pulls out some Zyns. I'm like, dude, where'd you get those? He's like, I get a mail order. I'm like, well, what the fuck? I can't find them anywhere. He's like, oh, well, I get a mail order. I got a bunch of them. I'm like, can I have some? So he gives me the tin he's been working on, and I was like, thanks. And I've been just sort of kind of like trying to, yeah, they're 6 milligrams, more than I need. I like the threes, but, you know, I tried to spread them out and mix them in with the nicotine gum and some other knockoff pouches from China. Where are these from? What difference does it make? They look right, but it's the fucking nicotine. It's so stupid. I've been off it before. I know where I'm at, but like I've got, you know, I'm not covered. You know, I before I get to LA, I need some. So like I reach out to this guy, Alex, who, you know, I don't really know. And I'm like, dude, you holding, you got any tins? Can I buy some off you? And he's like, all right, where do you want me to meet you? So, you know, Oh, what a mensch that guy is. He showed up. I met him downstairs with a couple of tins. I was exchanging cash. I'm like, don't give them to me. Just, I'll pay for all of it. We're exchanging cash on the street. He's handing me the little plastic tins of Zins. And I'm like, dude, fucking saved my life, man. I got to get a handle on this, man. I'll quit tomorrow. It was ridiculous. Doing a street deal for the nicotine pouches. All right, look. Dan St. Germain is a good guy, funny guy. His new special, Dance Fatty Dance, is now streaming on YouTube. He also has a new podcast called Working Stiff, where he talks about wrestling with other comics. And it was good to talk to him, and now you can listen to it.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
It's good to see you there, Dan.
It's good to see you too, dude.
I haven't seen you in a while.
You were my first big headliner weekend. I was opening for you at the Sacramento Punchline.
That's right.
In like 2009 or 10.
How did that work out? Was that an Olivia thing?
That was an Olivia thing, I think. Yeah, it was. But I was like, I was like pumped and also nervous for it.
Yeah.
It was like the first, oh my God, this guy's got a whole Times article written about him.
You know? That was after that? Did we sell well? Was there people there?
Yeah. I think it was sold out every night.
I kind of remember
it
that.
It was like you were already, the podcast was already doing well.
Yeah. That's when you had the long hair and you were kind of.
Long hair.
And were we staying in those condos across the street?
Yes. We were staying in the condos. We would go to this Mexican place at lunch and then Guitar Center.
Right.
And we went to watch you play.
Oh, that's right. We went to Guitar Center. Yeah. I'm kind of putting it together now.
Yeah. I had the creation of like your. I was like, oh, this is probably how he woos women too.
I'm never that proud of my guitar playing. It's weird. Yeah. I'm one of the few who got into show business not to impress women.
But, you actually play. I mean, everyone knows this already, but Mark's like a real guitar player.
I can play,
can actually really play.
Yeah. I think it was just a matter of, I remember I was looking for an acoustic guitar.
Yes.
And I ended up getting one eventually, but I remember that's what I wanted, that I didn't have an acoustic guitar, and I thought I would go over there and look at new acoustic guitars. I think that was what was going on.
How many guitars do you have now? I see two right here.
Well, I'm not one of those weird kind of boomer collectors. I try to get them for free. Like that black one I got for free, and that other one I bought out of spite. And I don't know how many I have, but I did buy an old one that I just like the ones that I like to play, and I have a lot that I don't really play, and I should just get rid of them. And I got these amps, I love those. They're all
so you
old.
Don't give a shit about getting like a signed guitar or anything.
No. And I don't really give a shit as guitar is investment, which is really what they do. I think John Bonamassa has completely ruined the vintage guitar market single-handedly by making them. Legit investments. I mean, if you can dig up these old guitars and find them for a certain price, they do, what do you call it, get more valuable as time goes on.
Yeah.
Like, I knew a guy that was willing to sell everything he had to get, like, a 56 Telecaster or whatever because he knew that in 10 years he would make $20,000. I'm not that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a lot of work, honestly.
Well, yeah. Everything sounds like a lot of work. Money.
Everything sounds like a lot of work. Sounds like a lot of work.
I'm just trying to remember you at that time. We had the same manager. I guess we still do.
We do, yeah. We're still at Old Avalon.
Yeah.
And I think Kelly.
Yeah, but great. We started with Olivia. I was with Olivia after Becky. And
right.
And that was one of those situations where your manager goes like, yeah, I'm going to stop managing. And you're like, oh, so...
I once had an agent who's she stopped. I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, going into environmental work. I was like, all right, well, yeah. Good luck. I guess I'm proud of you in a way.
But what the fuck do I do? Yeah, I'm glad you got a conscience. And show business enabled you to figure out how soulless the endeavor was.
Yeah, you forget that they're in the middle of their own movie. You know?
Oh yeah, of course you do.
Like I was in. I went to the silent retreat once. Like, do you know Spirit Walk? It's like San Fran or all. One of those. Like in between writing jobs, trying to find myself.
Yeah.
And then, like, I get there and then I see a bag like William Morris. Yeah. I was like, oh man, you can't fucking get away from this. Hey,
you do. Oh, really? At the Spirit.
Yeah, the silent retreat.
Someone was there.
Yeah, Jack Kornfield. It was Jack Kornfield's place.
Jack Kornfield. Who's that guy? I know that name.
He was one of the guys who brought like meditation, like one of the big four. Like him, Sharon Salzberg. And
oh yeah. So this is something you've pursued.
I haven't lately. I'm not. I haven't lately. I fell out of practice, but I had a time where I was very into it. I should get back to it, but it's very difficult.
Is it?
I mean, for me, it's difficult.
I don't know why it is, because for me too. Like I never really got into it. And I know that's part of the deal you go through. You know, you get into these pockets of. Ways of thinking, certainly if you play in recovery, where people are like, meditation's where it's at, you know. So like over the pandemic, I did sit with like that head, whatever that app
Headspace,
and I was able to kind of do it. And it's really only 15 minutes, and you think like, I don't know if this is working or not, but I think maybe it is. But for some reason, just to put that 15 minutes together a day, it's like, oh, I can't fucking. You know, just to sit.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I have some form of obsessive compulsive disorder. Not the part that, not like whatever form doesn't make me like good at counting cards, unfortunately. But it's supposed to help with that. And I guess it does a little bit, you know.
I don't know why I don't make the time to do it. I think that, you know, there's a certain type of personality where we're kind of set in the ways of what we do.
And, but you seem pretty... I mean, not calm, but you seem a little more centered, you know.
I think I am.
Than you were then, probably.
I think I am centered, and I'm less. I'm trying to be less, kind of anxiety driven and crazy and panicky.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's always tough.
But I watched a new special.
Oh, sweet man!
What? And I was trying to figure out, like, did you plan it?
Well, of course I planned the special. Yeah. Well, that's a fucking ringing endorsement right off the bat.
No. It was shot in a small club.
Small club.
And like I couldn't tell what was on the background.
Well, that's Old Man Hustle. That's the comedy club. They have Brooklyn Comedy Club.
What does Old Man Hustle mean? It's like, is this something to do with this?
It was a conversation I couldn't paint over.
Like, I was like, is this part of the special? Am I missing? You know, like, I didn't know.
No, it's just a small black box theater. I am in my head about it, so I'm glad you picked that up.
Sorry.
On that right in the beginning.
Sorry,
but
buddy.
No, it's just I couldn't, like, you know, like I wanted a place that I could fill.
Yeah,
I could have, because I funded
feel
it,
comfortable.
Funded it myself. I'm comfortable in most places, but like a place I could fill. Honestly, shout out to Sam Black for that. She's awesome. And she, you know, just did it as a favor for me. But it, you know, I knew I could fill it, and I knew that the guy was gonna, you know, guy Ed, who owns it, good guy, he was gonna give it to me for free, so that's why I did it there. But you know, I'm hopefully that doesn't watch it.
No, I just
started meditating now in front of you.
I just didn't know if that was part of it or whether, you know, it was the name of the place. There was just a moment, but I got past it.
Yeah, I'm glad.
And the special was good.
Thank
the jokes
you.
Were good.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, I'm a big fan of intelligent filth. You know,
and, yeah. I'd say I get put in that queue.
Yeah, I don't. I used to. I feel like I need to get back in it.
Well, your last special was great.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Really good.
You know, that was the other thing about like Lynn. She was a TM person. So
was
that
she like. Kind of like
twice a day, man.
None of them doing this.
Vaping,
was
no.
She getting you to do that?
Well, no, I mean, like, but she—it was just part of her life. It'd been dug in for a long time. It was just part of who she was. But no matter what she was doing, whether she was on set or any other time, you know, 20 minutes twice a day,
right?
She was in it,
And she would go out. She was good at it.
Did you notice like a change in her after she did it as far as like her?
Well, I think it was really integrated into her life to the point where it was necessary to maintain, you know, her whatever her grounding is or stability. But it was just like she was so into it that like, you know, she's one of those people that because she had a practice, you know, she would like have to sit a certain way. And then like within a minute, she was out. You know, she was like in it, and you could feel the difference of somebody who is that well practiced, you know, because she would do it, and I'd kind of walk by the room and be like, all right, well, she's wherever she is.
Were you ever having like a freak out, and then you like walk past her, and you're like, I'm resenting your fucking serenity right now?
Well, no, I mean, I always found it curious, and I appreciated the practice, you know, and that she would be so compulsive about it, but because I'm like I am, and I'm a comic, and I'm a dick, I'd be like, all right. Yeah. Whatever you got to do,
you know. Whatever we got to get each other through this. Whatever it is,
exactly. But wait, so now I'm trying to remember. But yeah, I mean the special's good. Do not misunderstand what I'm saying.
No, you. When I saw you in Austin, you complimented the special. I was like, oh, good. All right, that's a fucking weight off. All right, you know, like I don't have to worry about that.
So
you. During the interview, being like, you should really strive for more, you know, something like that.
Well, look, man, it's weird about the nature of specials. So you did it all yourself?
I basically, well, 800 Pound Gorilla came in at the end. They gave some funding and they're helping now a little bit. I mean, I got an offer, like one of these offers that like, you know, they offered like 20 people at the same time and were going to give me like a little bit of money.
Yeah.
It was going to be, and I just, they wanted me to do a full hour. And I was like, no one wants to see me for a fucking hour, man. Like,
yeah. People aren't doing the hours anymore.
40 minutes.
The job has changed.
The job has changed. You know, we're competing with, you know, 30 second dog welcoming soldier home videos. We can't compete with that shit.
I'm more in the cat saving algorithm. Look, we found this near death little monster, and we're going to fix him up.
Oh my god! I get those too. Or like for a week, I just had amputees, and I'm like, how did this happen? You know,
I get a lot of
furiously masturbating, but
I do. I get a lot of weird kind of large scale cooking endeavors.
Oh, those are good.
Yeah, where you're just sort of like, is that oil? How big is that piece of dough? You know, what are they mixing that in? Why are they touching it? You know, I get a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, it's relaxing. I find those relaxing.
Oh, I love them. Yeah. I love them. Then there's these ones where they just, satisfying cleaning jobs. Where
they're like, I don't get those.
Oh my God. They just like, you just see these guys. I've seen them like through a pipe that goes under a road.
Yeah.
They have a tractor with a chain hooked to a dead tire on the other side of the pipe. And they just pull the fucking tire through the pipe and the sludge comes out. Yeah. Like
see
a giant
office body.
Turd.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeez.
And it's sort of like, that feels good.
Yeah. No, that's like my wife watches like pimple popper videos. For
oh
that
my
reason.
God.
She like relax. And I can see it cause I kind of watch them too. And I see the relaxing.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of the Tourette's influencers. Love them.
Yeah.
I'll show you one after that. Like, you know, I talked about it on the podcast. Like, are we allowed to laugh? Because, you know, they're putting this up there. And I embrace and empathize and understand Tourette's. But some of them have these tics where they say things where it's like, that's the best comedy I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's always like, that's, you know, I think that's the biggest problem with stand-up now.
Not enough Tourette's?
There's not enough Tourette's. That'll be the new fucking thing. But, like, we're competing with everyone, like, just capturing organic shit on their phone, and that's always going to be more funny. It's like your best friend telling you a story is always going to be more funny than like, the best Richard Pryor set you've ever seen, you know? Just because, you know, there's just something that's just in the moment about that, you know?
Well, I think, but isn't that the shift to, you know, content as drug and, you know, it's kind of the death of narrative and conversation?
Yeah.
That's a paper I'm writing. So
you know when somebody says something true that's also depressing, where I'm just like, that's
the end of the world. I get it.
Yeah, I get it. Why did I do this? Why did I choose to do this again?
Believe me, I'm not doing that. Like I don't do the why did I choose to do this, but like there's some part of me that thinks, am I doing some ancient form? I mean, it may very well
be doing chamber music right now. We may both be doing chamber music.
Kind of. But fortunately somehow I've I've got an audience of middle-aged people that are fairly intelligent. And
you do you still have just individuals coming to your show? Because you,
I sell more single tickets.
Do you have more single tickets?
No, now those people tend to bring people.
Yeah, that, oh, like, there you go. They evolved like you did.
The joke that evolved now is that I know there's about 30% of the people in here are kind of disgruntled middle-aged women, and then there's another 30% of the people they brought. So there's a lot of people sitting here going like, so this is the guy, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's always annoying when you see them turn to the other one like, let's see what he's got.
Yeah.
Let's see what he's got.
Does that really happen, or is that something we're making up, Dan?
I don't know.
Are you making up that crowd in your head? Because I do. Like, is there really?
I don't know. I mean, I've definitely bombed. Like, have you ever been a comedian, like, who says they haven't bombed? I'm like, oh, this is like a serial killer or something.
I've realized that they're lying. I've seen like sets of people like, and these are guys I know, and I don't begrudge them for it. But years ago, there's this guy I used to work with in San Francisco, and I saw the set he did.
Yeah.
It was okay, but like I hear him talking about it a couple hours later. It's like I killed. I'm like, I don't know if you know what that is.
One of my best friends in comedy, Mike Lawrence.
I love that guy.
I love that guy. He's actually I think open for
a lot.
But like we were watching this guy, and we were both kind of like, "How's this guy not quit?" And Mike said to me, "He goes, he hears laughs that aren't there." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. It is a form of psychosis."
That's
very
true.
Very funny guy.
And I think you adjust to the type of laughs you get, because I know like a medium laugh, and I know which jokes are only going to get a medium laugh. And you know, if I like the joke enough, I'm like, "That's fine."
Right.
You know what I mean? What do I expect out of that one?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I want to do
this
it.
This is an amp up bit.
Yeah. So when I met you, like, I mean, it seems to me that you've gone through different waves of trouble. You're always on a wave of trouble.
Well, you know, I like to think that I do good for a little bit and then...
it goes away.
You know, the... I'm good now. I'm 6 months sober now.
That's good. But this has been so fucking ongoing.
It's been a long. It's been a lot.
You're one of those guys, though. Like, and we all know them. I'm certainly in the arts or in the business where, where you have these very prolific and together, you know, productive, creative periods, and then someone says, "Well, how's Dan doing?" It's like, "Well, not great right now."
Well, you know, part of the reason I'm on this is to get more work. So I'm in a good period right now, guys. But yeah, I mean, I think that, I get like, just to give you an idea of like, okay, after I saw you right like there
in Austin,
it was like.
In Sacramento.
This was in Sacramento. You know, like a year later, I had 2.5 years sober, and then I started drinking again.
Yeah.
And then
It's not like you're the kind of person.
Like I don't. Yeah, it's mornings. It's like
you're not the kind of person that goes like I can have a casual drink. It's like when you decide to drink, it's like it's a matter of weeks. Before it's like a fucking shit show.
Well, yeah. I mean, like that's just my personality. Like you know, like I had like. Like, actually, right around then, I got, like, a root canal, and they gave me, like, 13 Vicodin, and I took them all at once.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just,
Just to get high or to end it?
Just to get high, and I didn't get it high like I thought. Like, Vicodin doesn't work on me, so that was kind of a bummer.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
But, like, let's go back, though. I mean, like, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Rutherford, New Jersey, and then Westchester, New York in high school.
So you're always an East Coast guy.
I was an East Coast guy. And I spent 4 years in L.A. I'm not going to say where you live, but I lived around here for a little bit of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But, like, what got you into this game? I mean, do you have brothers and sisters and shit?
I do have a sister. She's studying to be a social worker now.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Yeah. But
I love social work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Like I wrote a pilot that was centered around social work. I think it's like these unsung heroes.
Yeah, they're like, as soon as you said that, I already saw the annoying network notes for it. Like, yeah, can you make him less sad? Can you make him less sad?
Well, it's like, that's where
it's a women's shelter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's where the title of the special came from. It's like an FX executive, after me and Lipside turned in a second story idea for a second episode.
Yeah.
He said, well, we love it. You know, there's no real notes. But is there any way we can get it from bleak to dark?
But it's a great special title.
Yeah.
That was a good one, too.
Thanks, man.
And I hate fucking watching specials. But
I watch more now. Like, I didn't for a long time, but now I'll watch everyone's special.
That must mean you're good emotionally. Because it's like, I remember I read this book about John Lennon, and he couldn't listen to any music because he would be like, fuck, I'm not making anything right now. This is
it's
like
good that you pick a high bar to compare yourself to resent yourself. It's good that your model is in place.
No, I'm not taking a bear to me. I mean, I'm not fucking joking.
But no, it's just that
I'm a peak best, but
I think what I've grown to do is understand, like, you know, like, fuck, I wish I could do like that, but I don't.
Yeah.
And I seem to be more okay with that. Like,
well,
when I
good,
see a
dude.
Like, I watch Rory Scovel's special.
Oh, he's so good, man.
He's so good. And, like, I don't know why more people don't know him, but we're all in the same boat. We do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not for everybody, but, you know, he really sort of, in a very kind of, what's the word I want? Like, you don't realize, because of the way he delivers, just how deep and heavy the shit he's talking about is.
Well, he's also, he's so relaxed. And somebody said this about, I think it was like, Steve Kerr is the coach of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing about Rory, where the greatest thing about, you know, Michael Jordan was that he was in the moment.
Right.
And Rory is like a guy who I always see in the moment. I've seen him in a bunch of different scenarios.
Yeah.
And he never tries to, like, you know, like, he always meets the energy and then takes it to wherever he wants it to go. It's,
yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
But he talks about big shit. You know,
yeah.
He's not shying away from anything.
No.
So you and your sister in Rutherford.
And my dad and my mom.
Wait, but your dad was in show business?
My dad was a writer, kind of worked for the Arts Council when I was, like, younger, and then moved to L.A. for a year, got a job writing for the Suzanne Plachet show, and then...
After Newhart?
Yeah, after Newhart.
Yeah.
And then moved back. He loves playwriting. That's his thing. He's a playwright, and he... And then he got a job writing for the Cosby Show for a little bit. They told him he never met Cosby because they told Cosby he was a black writer. So he just was like writing from home, being like, "Hey, where is this Mark
really?
Saint Germain guy?" Yeah, he met the son, the guy who plays the son, Malcolm Jamal Warner. Then he just wrote movies and plays from New Jersey. He hated L.A.
What movies?
He wrote the one of the drafts of the Nelson Mandela Walk to Freedom movie. So he went to South Africa to meet that dude. And he wrote this movie about a cheetah called Duma that was very well received. And he actually just wrote, the movie came out of the play he wrote, Freud's Last Session.
Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, a really good play. That's based on his, really good play, and that movie's based on his play.
Really? So. That just came out?
Yeah.
He's still around?
Out. So he's still around. Yeah, he's still working on stuff now. He's doing something with, I think, the Innocence Project.
Oh, yeah.
He's much more highbrow than me, Mark.
Yeah.
You know?
But you grew up with that.
I grew up with a lot of
with
books,
a play,
a
right?
lot of plays, a yeah. lot of plays.
Did he ever teach?
He does. I think he did it a little bit, but not until later on. He has recently, but not like predominantly.
So,
no.
But
he would. He would like. I think I was able to write a little bit easier because, you know, you have like fucking, you know, Sophocles and Euripides like
in
right
the
next
house.
To you. Yeah, that you
but
can just pull out.
But
and,
did
what,
you
read Electra or something?
Did you do you read that stuff? You read?
I did. I don't really anymore. I've been bad about books this year. I've been reading a lot about history, a lot of Nazi stuff, a lot of
sure.
World War II stuff.
Yeah, you want to prepare.
Prepare.
But so that's a very specific childhood, and it was one that I didn't have, but I always aspired to, so I gravitated more to, you know, people in bookstores, intellectual conversations, but was did your dad have a circle of friends that were like the intelligentsia of...
He had playwriting friends. He also had, like, you know, probably pretty normal, you know, friends.
But, like, is he of, like, David Rabe's generation or those kind of guys?
I don't think he was... I don't think it was... It wasn't... It didn't feel like I was, like... going downstairs and seeing F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway, you right. know, hanging out. He's definitely, you know, he's got a couple friends that are like, he's really good friends with Dr. Ruth. Like,
yeah.
So like, he's got a couple friends, and then he's got a lot of like normal friends yeah. too. Like, you know, guys that are
but did
just
you,
musicians. He's a social butterfly. I'm yeah. not. He's a social butterfly.
Are you guys close?
Very close.
And when, a lot. When, well, that's good. When you were growing up, I mean, is that what made you want to do that?
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, I had a therapist who said this, and I, you know, if I want to be brutally honest, you know, it's so funny, like, you know, I was obviously listening to a show up before I did it, and you're like, oh, what should I talk about? And then you're like, you end up like looking at your whole fucking, what, it's like, oh, you're just making sense of your life. It becomes right. just like, you're this detective, and it's this, you know, cold case, which is your identity. And
anybody, you mean, anybody curious.
Who does this, yeah, anybody who does this show, I'm sure has that, unless they come in and they do that, like, oh, this is the type of person I want
well,
to,
no,
I want to present
usually,
to the world.
Usually what happens with certain people is that they know of the show, but they never listen to the show, so they come in and they act like they listen to the show, but I can tell when they do or they don't, because they only mentioned the last two episodes,
or one episode
that like everyone like
yeah the Obama
to.
Episode
exactly
or
that kind of thing. I like the detective analogy.
I was really into that for a while. I was trying to do like a true crime.
A true crime what, for yourself?
I quit comedy for like two years or a year, and I was like. I wanted to do like a true crime podcast about cold cases.
Yeah.
And I would call these. It's just really hard to do that, by the way. It's a lot harder than comedy, because I would call like the precincts and be like, hey, can I get some info on this murder? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's a lot of work. My hat's off to everyone who does that kind of work.
Well, that was what Patton's wife did that before she passed. She did a big one, right? Didn't she help catch
Cold
the Golden
State Killer?
State?
Yeah. I'm into all that kind of
you are.
Book. Yeah, yeah.
What do you make of that in terms of who you are? Why is that? Because I don't have any interest in that at all.
I don't know. You know, like I always like, you know, if you get in a fight with somebody and then all of a sudden you like read a bunch of stuff on Dahmer and you're like, well, I'm not that fucked up.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
I'm not that bad.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the human reason for it. But as far as why
just for building rationalizations.
Building rationalizations, yeah. But as far as like why I got into like theater, I guess, and then comedy eventually, you know, it was just one of those things where I had a I had a talent or predilection towards it.
Well, what did the therapist
say? He's basically like, whatever you do, it's like he talked about narcissism.
Yeah,
like he was kind of like in a broader way. Like we're all a little narcissistic,
of course.
Like so, if you look like whatever the world rewards you with. So like when I did my first play, my dad and mom were like, okay, you're funny at that. You're good at that, you know? So you're like, okay, I'm good at that. So the world's validating me on that. So let me just, because I don't know who the fuck I am. So let me run towards the thing that the world is saying, hey, you're good at this thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because I didn't like sports and now I love sports. Like,
yeah.
Like there's certain things that like, you know, I hate it. You know, I go, oh, I'm just going to do theater because I wasn't good as a wrestler. Or
yeah.
But yeah, so you run towards whatever society rewards you as, I think, when you don't have.
Or even your peer group or even anybody.
Yeah, or when you don't have like a, especially because, you know, when you have an identity crisis, I think it's like, oh, they like me in this. Okay, I'm going to go towards theater.
Well, that's interesting because like I don't know if I ever framed it like that. And I don't know that I was necessarily being rewarded. I think I was defying people to reward me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I didn't do stand up until like I was like, I did like actually like once or twice in high school, but I was mostly, you know, doing plays. I was acting.
You were writing plays?
I did eventually, when I was 18, I wrote this play. And
how's that hold up?
You know, it's not, I wrote a lot worse ones in college from that one. But that was based on Sophocles' Philoctetes, like based in like 70s Jersey or something like that.
What is Sophocles?
It's it's one of the Trojan War guys that was like left behind on an island.
That's
sort
the
of
play?
Thing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But, you know, like I was very highbrow, you know. So anyway, I did that and it won the Stephen Sondheim like festival or something like that. So I did that for a little bit, but then I went to college and I just drank myself, you know.
Where'd you go?
University of Evansville. It's where Rami Malek and like a bunch of actors went. My dad was like, I think like a pretty big you know, they did a lot of his plays. And I think, you know, up until stand-up, I really wanted to be my dad, like a playwright. And sure. Not as much now.
But, for his approval, yeah, you think, or just because you respected?
I think I respected him. He always approved. He was always supportive. So that's never good. Like a, you know. My mom was a little bit different.
What'd
story.
What'd she do?
She was a special needs teacher. And then, you know, the last couple years, she wasn't really doing anything. Yeah. But
sorry.
No, it's okay. She passed away a year and some change ago.
Were they
very
together
troubled
still?
Person? No, she they divorced and she.
How old were you?
I was in my 30s. I was actually writing for Not Safe with Nikki Glaser, who's a friend of mine, really funny comic,
love her.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, they separated around then, and my mom kind of had a psychotic break. And
from what?
I think her job ended, and my dad, you know, they got divorced, and that was too much. And then the drinking kind of took off. My grandpa died of alcoholism.
Oh, yeah.
And then it hurt my mom later on. Eventually, we basically, you know, had to put her in a facility. But,
yeah.
Like, she was, yeah, she just wasn't, you know, she gave up. I don't know what to, you know, like, she just completely gave up.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that with my mom because, because it's a mental thing. It's not like she's losing her mind.
Yeah.
Or that she's physically that compromised. But there's a certain type of personality, I think, and I'm sure it happens all the time, where life just takes its toll and you don't necessarily want to die, but you don't want to live either. Or you don't,
don't
want to
engage.
I mean,
she would say that to me, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
She was like locked in these memories from, sorry, it's like hard to bring up. She was locked in a lot of memories from when we were kids,
yeah.
I guess.
And, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was bad. I mean, it was like, you know, before we got to the facility, she was like, you know, she was a woman who had her master's and you know, she wasn't the easiest woman all the time. She was smart and
yeah.
had her master's. And then she's, you know, fucking, you know, like the whole house has black mold in it. And she's like, you know,
yeah.
wetting every couch and shit. And you're
yeah,
like,
that's
oh,
what's
this
going
is
on.
A fucking nightmare.
Lost her will.
Yeah, you just kind of give up, which I understand that because I think I have that in me, you know?
Yeah, was she actively drinking or no?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For
oh.
sure. I put her in rehab once, and then I helped put her in rehab. I
yeah.
helped pay, and then, you know, she's drinking a week later. So it's
like, oh, my God.
It was not like, it was kind of a hard, I'm still dealing with it now, a hard couple of years, but.
Yeah, it's yeah. like, it's very difficult. You know, both my parents are still alive and struggling with their own struggles, but like, and my parents got divorced when I was in my 30s, too.
Yeah, it's this is cool, right?
Yeah, it's a different thing when you're in your 30s.
You don't get the sympathy. But then when I tell, you know, like one of my best friends in comedy, who's my writing partner, Dan Soder, he was on the show.
Terrific guy.
Like, you know, he's got a dead dad. And like when I tell the whole story, he's like, you know, he's like, most people talk about dead parents and I don't feel bad. He's like, you're in my boat, buddy. He's like, so I'm fine when you do it. By the way, he's been like a lifesaver for me.
Yeah, he seems great, pretty solid guy.
Yeah, I've been writing with him. And
he's worked it out.
For sure. He's one of those guys too. He's been so, you know, he hasn't drank in 10 years. And I mean, all my friends, you too, man. Like, you guys figured it out, you know. You know, and I'm still an open micer in recovery.
But yeah, but that's part of the game. You know, I mean, that's part of the disease, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
So when did you start realizing that you had that?
Pretty early on.
Like when you went to college?
High school. No.
Oh, high school?
Like, there would be these disasters, you know, like, you know, I would be doing okay for a while, and then I would be the lead of school play, and then I would drink half a bottle of Bacardi and then pass out and back of
the
school.
Yeah, I did that too, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'd be doing okay, and then I would, like, fucking buy cocaine or something.
Yeah.
Like. And then college, I was kind of like, you know, I was a disaster drinking too much and, you know, probably not very fun to be around. And I would just, you know, the problem is that it works for the first hour and then, you know, it ends up
a year later.
I always said if I could just stop at 8, I would still be drinking. But that's not my story, unfortunately.
It's weird to have that background in it because I talk about that and I don't always frame it as I should. But I was definitely a chore. I wasn't a fun drunk in high school. I would I would drink hard liquor. I would get vomit. I'd be, you know, my friends would be like, fuck.
Yeah, and why can't you just have like a couple and chill, bro?
Or they'd throw me on a lawn next door because they
got thrown on plenty of lawns.
Yeah. They wanted to go to the party.
They air you out.
Yeah. And then they, one time I vomited all over myself in the bleachers of a football game.
Oh, my God.
So it was like I was the center. It was like a fucking disaster. But like, I still don't always frame that as alcoholism. I just frame it as high school. But I mean, in retrospect.
Well, it depends if you get out of it, then, you know, if that was a phase. But if phase keeps happening all the time, it's probably
well, kind of perked worse. It kind of percolated along, and then cocaine. You're like a cocaine and booze guy. That's me too.
ABC.
Yeah. What's that?
Alcohol becomes cocaine, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I smoked weed all the time too, but you know.
I mean, that was the thing the last time is that I was just smoking, like the last couple of years, I was just smoking weed constantly. And I'm like, oh, I'm California sober because I got off that because I was addicted to benzos. So I was like, let me move to weed.
The weed, you know, now though, Jesus Christ,
it's not what I smoked in high school.
I really thought
you
were like, you know, there's a couple of ways you could go with that. I thought you'd be like, it's amazing.
Well, I will say this. I just got out of rehab in December, and anybody who tells me, oh, the 70s, we parted hardy, or my generation, they parted hardy, the kids now that are on fentanyl, and it's like they're super, like super shredded. They're almost like mutants as far as like the amount of drugs they can take. Sure. I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
Like, we cannot hang. Like, if you went back to try to, like, hang with these kids— they can, like, first off, they, like, you know, they're just comatose. They don't fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like, they just, like, it's just, like, kind of like zombie. And,
yeah,
like, this kid's like, you know, you can, you know, and I was like, yeah, you're right. I can't, like, you're on medical end of life drugs.
Yeah.
You know, like, casually.
Yeah. And very dangerous.
Very dangerous. Shout out Wellbridge Recovery.
Yeah.
In Long Island.
You doing this in?
Tim, you got me on him in Austin.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, fuck. Well, I always hated Skull, and I was like, oh, that's, I don't throw up with this one. So I do that while I vape now.
I'm sorry, buddy.
No, it's okay. I mean, that one's pretty good to get me into compared to...
I did that. Like that. See, this is the fucked up thing about addicts is like, for me, like with nicotine, I can never get off it totally. And I had for a few years, but... when I first got the Zins, you know, which is non-tobacco and it's nicotine, I literally said, this is what the fucked up thing about being an addict is, and it's so telling. I got the Zins, and I put one in my mouth, and like I'm like, oh, this is great. I'll just do like 3 or 4 of these a day, and because like it's giving me enough. And now, like, dude, I'm stockpiling them.
Yeah.
When I go to other states where you can get the flavored ones, I just went to New Mexico, and now I've got a bunch of those. And then
which flavor do you like the best?
This menthol.
Menthol is great. I used to have the Juul Pod menthols. Yeah,
I never did the vapes, but
yeah.
But the thing is like the about the addict thing is you start seeing the used ins like they're on the floor. And then I'm like, oh, this is like fucking anything.
But I think that, I mean, maybe I'm just saying this. I think that the Zin, I don't want to turn this into a fucking Zin commercial, especially because they're not paying me. But like Zins are, it seems like the least destructive way you can ingest nicotine.
Pretty
besides
good.
Besides probably a patch, but probably the patch is better. But
you don't get the fun, you know, like the taste, the flavor. You just
little spring in your step.
Yeah, you just get the whatever. It's spring in your step and then nausea. Because it's the same thing. If I could just stay with that first hour.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The gum's okay. The lozenges are
well, the gum makes me burp, so I can't do the gum.
And the lozenges, they fuck my stomach up. But so a couple addicts talking about the one thing they can still do. So how many rehabs have you been in?
I've been to 2 inpatients, 3 outpatients, and a detox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you. But yeah.
I'm 6 months now. I'm very you know, working on a show with Dan Soder for Peacock. That's going great. You know, maybe starting a new podcast with my buddy Sean Donnelly. I'm trying to like pitch this to a great guy, funny comic. I'm trying to pitch this into things are positive now. They're gearing back.
No. I can feel that. I mean, you know? I think I took you to a meeting once way back in the day, or we went to one.
Yeah.
And you were kind of had this. I was trying to figure out what the look is, but you know, I think it has something to do with that sense of, you know, kind of a weird, you know, who am I thing.
Yeah.
That identity search.
For sure.
You know, and there's some part, like, I don't know why, I try to figure out in terms of my cold case and who I am, why am I missing that piece? And I, you know, the piece
what,
that
the
says,
part, like, who am I?
Yes. Like the piece that's sort of like, well, you're grounded in you. I mean, it's taken me years to accept it.
But you've had that in different forms.
Yeah, but there, I still feel like, you know, there's an essential self that's a bit, a bit nebulous. And it
in you?
Yeah, and it bothers me, yeah.
I don't see that.
Good.
I mean, I just don't, you know.
Well, no, I think I've reeled it in and I've landed in it, but it was a yeah. chore where I think kids who have parents who aren't boundaryless or fucked up, they sort of like, they kind of get that. They were able to develop a sense of self early on. Yeah. But like you were talking about, if it's narcissistically driven, then that's a sort of a ego-centered avoidance of authentic self.
But what is an authentic self?
I know.
Right? I don't know. I sometimes you have to be careful with the story you tell yourself about yourself, and I do this a lot, where then you don't want to, because it's like I always kind of see myself as like, oh, I'm this, you know, like, been down so long, it feels like up to me kind of
sure,
guy.
Man.
But it's like, I got a beautiful wife who's amazing. I got a great dogs. I got, you know, I'm working with some of the funniest fucking people. Like, I've had a decent, you know, I mean, I haven't had your fucking career, but I've done fine. I'm not an open micer. You know, like, I've done, like, but
right.
It's the story that you tell yourself.
That's right.
You know, that's like, and you're like, well, I'm not that either. Like, I'm not this shit, but I'm not like shit. You
no,
know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
You
know, there's so that constant like, comparing. Despair business going on.
Yeah, but you've got to, you know, but you have to be careful the stories you tell yourself because all of a sudden, you know, I'm a huge wrestling fan. All of a sudden, you're living the gimmick, you know,
yeah.
And then shit.
Yeah.
I'm not, I am, you know, I am this thing that I created.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's right. That's true. You know, I think like I did a bit recently where I'm like, you know, there's all this talk of authenticity and, you know, authentic self. And like, I mean, what does that even mean? I mean, you know, you are who you what gets you through and engages with the world. Like I said, if I was really my authentic self, I don't think I'd do anything. I wouldn't want to do anything.
No, that would be that you'd be under a tree.
Right. Which is the Buddhist idea.
Yeah.
So like, there's a spiritual component to
giving
it.
Up your princehood to just be in the moment. Yeah. I don't know many people who've done that.
No
by the way.
Not in the city anyways.
Not in the city.
Yeah.
No.
So, okay. So you're in college and you're not doing stand up, but you're writing.
No, I didn't do stand up until after college. Because it was just one of those things where I could write something and then get on stage and have immediate approval or rejection from it, and that was attractive to me.
Yeah,
it's so funny. Like you talk about comedy, it's you're like, are you talking about comedy? Because this feels like so medical. But yeah, so I ended up, you know, and then you know, I was with the crew of like, you know, Mike Lawrence and Mark Norman and Sam Morril and Sean Donnelly and Mike Drucker and Annie Letterman, like just we were doing like, you know, 16 mics a week. Dan Soder was probably part of that, although I always considered him doing kind of better than that. But like, and then, you know, when those were probably the most fun year of my life was the second or third year when you're just doing open mics and you're like,
oh,
you got in this little show. Oh, my God. He was on the show with you. And, you know, nobody's like. Everybody's like, you know, the victories are like, it hurts a little, but it's also like, God, we're part of this whole fucking thing together.
Yeah,
you know, going to the diner afterwards.
That's right. Yeah, that was,
you know, it's probably similar to what you talked about with like Attell and Silverman and stuff like that, where that
totally.
Crew, which was, that was the crew we looked up to. We
could
talk about you guys like, holy shit, you know? So that was kind of,
That's the best part of it.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
And I always say now, if somebody's like getting into comedy, the best part is writing a new joke and it working. Everything else is, you know,
it kind of is. Dude.
It still is forever. you know,
I know
because you're not sick of it yet.
Yeah, and then it does go away. You know, there are jokes that were perfectly fine that I'm like, I'm done with that one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it served me for a couple months.
Right.
But, you know, now I'm tired of it. Because I don't, like, once I start to acknowledge structure, I start to get kind of bored unless I'm, like, keep building it.
Yeah.
Like, if something's a little thing, like, I forget them.
Is that the menthol one?
Yeah, but I don't know if I have any more.
you could smell it on me. Like I was in jail.
I have one.
Take it. That's fine. I have the thing here. I'm doing two. That's fine.
It's a great tone, though. Is that the...
What's up? What's up? Like, we were having a really nice conversation, then all of a sudden, like, it became just two animals fighting over a fucking piece of meat.
I pulled this in now, and you're like, hey, so...
What's up? What's up, Ron? What's going on with that, bro? What's going on? Like, I have to stop myself every time somebody's like they're like, oh, my mom has cancer, my dad has cancer, or something like that. And you're I'm like, oh, shit.
Where's the...
What are they? Yeah, I'll be like, what are they, oxys?
What are you doing with the leftover...
I'm going to help. I'm helping you. Let me help you.
Should I help you clean out her bathroom?
You've never offered ever. Like, you're like, motherfucker, you didn't offer to pick me up from the airport. And you're trying to like take my mom's pain meds.
So, okay. So, but that happened after college. You graduated? I did graduate.
Yeah. I worked, you know, in a movie theater, and then I was 3 years, I was a guard at the Metropolitan Museum of Arts.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I worked overnights the last year.
But you were overnights?
Yeah, which
Holy
is crazy.
Holy fuck. Were you high? Crazy.
No, I was sober during that time. I was contributing writing to The Onion, like so you get like $10 of a joke.
Which version of The Onion?
This
Who was
like
in
the
charge?
News Network and the Sports Network. Okay. I don't even know. Like, I could probably know. If you name somebody, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's the person I sent jokes.
What was it like being in the Met in the middle of the night?
Crazy, but good. Overnights was better during the day than during the day. But you it's start the problem you. 6 months in, you're not getting vitamin D, and then you start like things start happening, and you're you know,
oh, your body you starts going crazy.
Yeah, and my schedule was insane where I'd be, you know, from 12:20 to 8:20, I would be overnights and I would write when I can.
But what room were you in? Did you were
all
you just,
over? You get put all over.
You just walk around the Met.
Yeah, you get you just kind of go in the middle of the night, and you know the American Wing is supposedly haunted, so you're walking through that. You know,
I can't believe that. That must have been crazy.
It is crazy, but you know, it's so funny. Like in the, you know, like the like because during the day you kind of get put in a gallery. I was a trouble guard, so they put me in the Greek and Roman section. But you'd like you're in the impressionist wing, and you're like, oh my god, I'm around these Kandinskys and all this.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm back in the Kandinsky room. You know, like everything becomes the same again.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I was there and. That was pretty wild, man. I actually ended up writing this web series for Comedy Central about it, which I don't think their audience loved, but it was really fun to work on with Dan Powell and Janine Garofalo. It's called Insecurity, but, you know, it was like, I don't think I'd figured... I thought it was funny, but it was like too dark for them. Their YouTube, they're like, this isn't fucking Brickleberry, fuck you. You know, it was like that.
Right.
You know, one of many... one of many little fucking... bumps in the road of my comedy career.
Yeah, but it seemed like, you know, at some point pretty early on, you knew that you wanted to write. I mean, like, comedy specifically. Because, like, for me, like, as a stand-up, I never wanted to write for anybody. Like, I never saw that as a job option. Like, because I guess I was more addicted to the compulsive immediacy of doing stand-up, and I still kind of am. And even this...
Yeah.
The podcast, like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, you're going to get, you look down, my cock's out. But what? Like, I mean, I think that, I still think that, like I said before, telling a new joke and having it work is fucking.
But at some point, you realize that writing was a job that, you know, you could earn money at.
Yeah.
Like, so you know, with stand up, you never know.
Yeah, and I mean, I was making, and I think that's kind of like, now I'm much more focused on stand-up, but like, I think that, you know, when you make money as a writer, you're kind of like, well, I'm not going to fucking take this, I'm going to get like this much, I'm going to get like $1,500 for this weekend when I could be making, you know, $4,000 a week as a writer. And like,
well, no, I tell people all the time that like, I used to, but I don't know how the business works anymore.
Yeah.
But like,
well,
you
I
know,
don't
if,
either.
You,
I don't know
if you start as a stand-up, most of the guys I started with, they were smart, you know, they didn't put all their fucking, you know, eggs into that basket. They became writers, showrunners, other things in show business.
Because right.
if you can manage comedy, that's a hell of a skill set.
It used to be. Yeah. I mean, I'm still figuring it out. You know, I feel like, you know, it's that like jack of all trades, master of none, you know, like you just.
But it's not. It's like pretty specific. You're a comedy writer on both levels, you know, whether it's stand up or writing.
But I know. But there's like, you know, like you write for multicam, a single cam variety show. It's all different sets of skills.
Have you done all of those?
Yes. No. Yeah. Maybe not single cam.
What was the first writing gig?
God, I wrote for Silent Library on MTV, which was like a prank show.
Yeah.
I did 2 weeks on that, which is, that's not around anymore. It was a guy, the guy who was host was like a parkour guy. It was like, that was like how
a what?
The parkour is, you know, the guys who like jump around and like do videos that. And then I wrote for on Fuse, Mark Hoppus's show. It was like Amy Schumer's first show.
Yeah.
And then I would sell stuff and then get staffed and sell stuff. And, you know, I actually haven't been, like, it's been a couple of years. The last thing I was on was Bill Burr's Immoral Company. My buddy Tyler Falbo is great, created it. It's like this really dark sketch show.
Oh, yeah?
Were you in one? I'm not sure if you were in one.
So.
I don't think so. But it was Bill Burr was hosting, and it ended up being on Roku. It was on Quibi for a little bit, if you remember that. We all, like, sold a show to Quibi in that year before
disappeared.
It disintegrated. Yeah. Everything is, like, a different, you know, skill set. And there's, like, you know, there's, like,
have you
masters
done,
in each of them.
Have
and
you
I'm,
done
not,
network?
I'm not that.
You're not.
Yeah, I wrote a network. I wrote on Superior Donuts. Jermaine Fowler. It's based on a Tracy Let's Play.
No, I know. I auditioned
for
that.
Yeah, yeah. I think you were. They went older because they went
Judd.
They went Judd for
yes.
that. Yeah. You would have played like young Judd.
Yeah.
And that was wild because my dad had worked with Judd, so it was kind of fun to. Like,
everyone's worked with Judd.
Yeah, he's
been
around
the game.
Forever.
He
man.
Played my dad.
He's
yeah,
been around
yeah.
forever, you know?
Yeah, no, he it was kind of interesting.
Great guy.
He is a great guy. He's like in his 90s, I think.
And you talk about somebody who's like, yeah, he's in his 90s. And you talk about, I mean, that guy's been nominated for an Oscar, Ordinary People. And he's still like, he still treats it like, hey, this is a job that I have
well,
to
the
do
ones
today.
That last do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that like when I was casting Marin, I was just surprised at all the how it worked. Like there's all these old actors around and they just want to work. And some of them they'll go anywhere.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Basically, the decision making is how long do I have to be away? You know, can I get my basic fee and will they fly me first class? And Judd usually likes a golf course close by.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a good restaurant? Is there a good golf course?
I'm learning that about acting because I'm doing more acting and I'm trying.
You're very good.
Well, thank
you're
you.
Very good. You're, I thought, you know, excellent Glow. My wife worked on Glow. She was an associate casting director. She worked under Jen Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Who's really good. But yeah, they, you were excellent on that.
Thanks, man.
That's a whole different. It's a whole different skill.
It's when the more I talk to actors, you know, because a lot of them just accept that they're going to do bad shit. Because, like, the decision making is I'm a working actor. So it really is like, where's it shooting? How long am I away?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the money? This is good enough material. I'll go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I don't have to be, you know, away for so long.
Yeah, it's. You know, I think that, like, the skills that make you a great actor are the skills that. Don't make you a great comic. Like,
no,
I
yeah,
think,
you can't.
Like,
yeah.
actor, you just lose yourself. And
you
comedy, you're in control. Comedy, you're a quarterback.
That's right.
You're like, I got to throw it to this pocket.
That's
I got to
right.
throw it to this pocket.
Yeah.
If you do that at acting, you're fucked. Because I've seen, I'll tell you who afterwards, but I've seen, you're a very good stand-up comic actor because I don't see you thinking.
Yeah.
And I've seen, like, really great stand-ups when they act. Sometimes I'll see them think about how they're going to say the line before they say the line.
Or they're insulated in yeah, they're controlling an outcome that's not
right
in
because
the
they're
present
because they have trauma from doing bad road kicks.
Yeah, or like, it is a one-sided experience. Like I knew when I did Marin that there was going to be a learning curve and it was going to take me a while to figure out you know how to be you know comfortable you know on a set on camera. I knew that I wasn't going to be good at first. It was okay.
Did you find were you more comfortable in roles that weren't yourself?
I'm not my craft, whatever it may be, it's like I am who I am. What do I have to turn on or off? What do I have to amplify or negate from the being I am? So I'm not doing some transformative acting work. I'm not going to, you know, I did do an accent in Two Leslie, but no, I'm not losing myself entirely in anything other than the present. I seem to be able to do that.
That's good.
You know, in that moment. But like, I'm still trying to, I took this new job. There are things I want to try to do as an actor to see if it's, if it works, if I'm more satisfying, if, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of it's just bullshit.
Yeah, we're song and dance men, you know?
Well, but acting, too, it's like everyone's got a thing they do, but there is no one way to do it. And I think most of it is either you have it or you don't. Either you're natural on the screen or you're not.
Yeah. And I've had, because I was in, I've been in a bunch of pilots, and
yeah.
sometimes I'll kill it at the table read, and then I'll do it, and I'm like, oh, I fucking lost the rhythm of this house. Then you're it's over, because you're like
you're trying to like
look
wheels.
For a pattern. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's daunting, man. It's all daunting. I guess it's not. I mean, compared to being a fucking
no,
steel
I mean,
worker,
like there's a
know?
Lot, but there's a lot you can do with it, and it's just a matter of like embracing. Like I'm just learning more and more, and I'm paying more attention to like you know what acting is. Like I just was talking to Aubrey Plaza. I mean, you know, the insecurity will kill you. You know, and at some point, like you said, in terms of identity, you know, you've got to have a certain comfort in yourself. Like, well, they hired me, so they must yeah. want me. So I'm going to have to deliver some me.
Yeah. I'm still figuring that out, but yes, for sure, 100%.
So after Superior Donuts, you did other shit?
I wrote on Michelle Wolf's show.
Oh, yeah. How's
on
she?
Netflix. She's great.
I can't get friends. Her to be on the show.
Still friends. Still really, still good friends.
Now, were these, in these jobs, were there jobs where people were like, dude, you got to.
They know me as a stand-up.
But do you get the job, and is there ever a point where they're like, you got to slow down?
Like, I usually am not using, and then all of a sudden working? I'll have. Which I want to thank, you know, I did at Superior Donuts, I kind of had one where I went off, and Bob Daly, who's my boss there, is this kindest
yeah.
guy in the world. You know, he was very understanding of that. But or something would happen, like, I think at the end of one job, when I got addicted to benzos, I'm like, fuck, these jokes aren't as good anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's all, like, kind of room temperature, so I had to get off those because I was having panic attacks. So I need something to stop the panic attacks yeah. that wasn't drinking. It's like, you know, you put your finger on the dam, a hole of the dam, and then, you know, you're...
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, no, I didn't have that conversation. I haven't really had that conversation, but I've embarrassed myself for sure as a stand-up. Like, You know, like, I mean, for God's sakes, I like asked Sinbad to buy me crack at a fucking comedy fest. You know, I've done like
shit faced.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've done plenty of. Yes, of course. It wasn't like, yeah, I did my yoga and then I went over to Sinbad and I asked if I could score. By the way,
why
know,
Sinbad?
He was there. It was in Traverse City, Michigan. It was there.
Oh, I know that.
Great,
festival.
Great. Yeah, but why, I'm not going to be invited back, by the way.
But I mean, but like I wouldn't think.
Sober
I need
now,
crack.
By the way. Sober now.
Yeah. I wouldn't think I need crack worse than Sinbad.
Why? The problem is I was so drunk I needed to wake up.
I used to do that fucking. I used to go on the road when I was still using, and I'd get drunk at a bar, and there'd be no one in there but one guy, and I'd hear him like sniffle, and I'd be like, "That's the guy. That's the guy."
Or you go to the strip club, and you're not even there for the girls. You're just like there because you know her, she's dating a coke dealer. You know.
Oh boy. And that was the other thing I learned about when I got sober is that when you use outside of the drugs or the physical thing. You put yourself in positions where it's exponentially much higher possibility of you getting killed or
oh my
in
God,
trouble.
Dude. I look at like, you know, before I got like I had a nice like I kind of had in between, you know, I had a couple shows at Fox that was in development and then those stopped. I'm like, oh fuck, I'm not going to be a thing, you know, like, you know, because yeah. like when things, you know this, like when you first like get Montreal,
yeah.
like you're going to be the next disease
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like a couple months, I'm not like, you know, I ended up, I don't know how, but like getting downtown LA, I'm getting my ass kicked by a father and son, like in front of a 7-Eleven. And then I was just at a Korean barbecue place and that waiter just stopped by and like fought him off for me. But I was like on the floor incapacitated. And then I just started writing on Nikki's show like 3 or 4 months after that. So I think that would, again, it would be like, go good disaster and then good,
right.
good. And I think a lot of it is I make... You know, my career or a relationship or something, a higher power.
Yeah.
I'm not really thinking about like, you know, me and
yeah.
like, just try to put me healthy.
Yeah.
In front. And I also like getting fucked up, you know, like that's another problem, you know.
Yeah, but like it seems feeling. Like, but that's one of those examples is like, you don't fuck around. You're all in.
No, that was, I mean, all in, but like, I got piss on my, I mean, all in to what? All in
well, I just
disaster,
mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I just mean, yeah. there's a very small window of fun, it seems.
Very small window of fun. And I do know, I do know a couple people who I smell, I'm like, who'd be like, hey, you're friend of Bill. And I'm like, you're doing this to fucking network, aren't you?
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, I've met a couple where I'm like.
Still? That I mean, that feels
not
like.
Not lately, but yeah, I've met a couple that I'm like, you're not. Oh, yeah. I remember. I saw you drink. That wasn't that bad, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, I remember Annie Letterman, yeah. Funny comic, but she had seen, when she had seen you after I opened, you're like, hey, he's a nice guy. He's got it bad. Like,
is that that's right? What I said?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of, you know, for whatever it is, it's my family, you know?
Yeah. It's no, I mean, I do remember saying that when when I first started hearing
about
you.
Not in a bad way. It was a nice way, but, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the reality. I mean, some people, it's not a genetic thing. And some people, you know, it's just a compulsive thing. But, you know, you do know the difference between, you know, people who are like, that guy's drinking a half gallon.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. It's, well, I would revere all these people and, like, Eugene O'Neill and stuff like that. All these people that were just fucking, you know, like why would you revere guys like that in high school?
Well, because
like
they made amazing art. And that's the one thing that everybody says about you, that no matter what, you work your ass off. And you get the work done, and you write the shit out of stuff.
Well, you know, some, you know, dude, it's hit or miss. It's all hit or miss.
But you do the work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And that's, yeah, see, that's the difference between you and just, you know, the guy in the street who has who's got it bad, is that somehow or another, not unlike O'Neill, you know, you balance your... your insane disease with productivity. And that's not nothing.
It's not nothing, you know? I've been able to... pull myself up and get.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't write anything.
Now.
I don't even like to write. But the idea of sitting in front of a
computer. Well, you wrote on Marin. You wrote.
I did, but
thing.
I didn't like it. Anytime I had to do a script,
I
I'm like,
I mean,
oh,
I like
my
writing.
God.
I'm writing a show with Dan Soder now. Yeah. With actually Stone Cold Steve Austin as the star.
What's the angle?
It's a cartoon. It's Stone Cold. Like retires from wrestling and starts becoming a lawyer for a nonprofit historic black law firm, and it's like funny and absurd. And
yeah,
we're like on the third draft at Peacock, and we're hoping, you know, fingers crossed. It's a trip. It's like a it's like, you know, it's like an action cartoon, but it's anyway. The point that I don't know what the fuck I was saying, but that's been fun because it's my own thing,
right?
But
like sometimes you like to write your own thing,
yeah. But like, you know, sometimes when you're on staff, it can get. It can get tough. It can get very tough.
Yeah, I hated sitting in a writer's room with just no one saying anything. You're just all stuck.
Yeah, I don't like. Nobody likes
on
to
an
work.
Act break.
You know, I don't like to work. I still work. I mean, I've clearly worked, but like you don't like it. You know, just kind of want to.
Yeah, it's not as satisfying as just getting up on stage and whatever happens happens.
That's fun, or it's not satisfying as fucking. Getting blotto, dude, and looking out on a lake. And that's the problem.
Let's not get too excited
I know,
about
I'm
that.
I'm not. But I'm saying like that's why I come back. You know what I mean? Because I see like that's where it comes back.
Yeah.
Like I'm the closest. I had a sponsor who said this.
Yeah.
And he said the closest that I've ever come to peace is that 5 minutes after I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
And that's. You know what I think that's the goal of my life is trying to find. But I have that now. I have a great.
How'd you meet your wife and how'd that happen? How'd she take on this project?
Oh my God! Right, she's the fucking best.
Yeah.
She's been my lifesaver. She's not drinking now either because she's like, you're not gonna have an excuse, you know, to do anything. She's like, I'm fine, you know. Basically, like. She was a mutual friend. I always thought she was hot, and she was a mutual friend. And I'm like, hey, is she single? And she's like, she is, but she's, you know, she just got out of a bad relationship. And I'm like, ooh, that's where I come in, you know? And I snuck into the TF. Because, you know, you always want to go in after a bad, you don't want to go in and like, oh, yeah, she was dating a doctor without borders. Yeah, like, oh, I'm not going to fucking,
I'm not even going to try.
There, you know? Yeah. Like, and then we just started dating for a little bit. Then we were just friends. And then we were like, fuck it, let me, let's make this work. Let's make it long distance. And that week, I got I emailed Dan Powell, and he's like, "Oh, we're looking for people for this Michelle job." So I left Superior Donuts.
Yeah.
I left like right at the end of the second season. I jumped right to Michelle.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of work, but like, I moved with her to New York, and 9 months.
Oh, you were
later,
out here. That's when you were out.
I was out here, and then 9 months later, we were engaged, and we got married in Massachusetts, and it'll be 5 years. In October, and the best decision. I've made a lot of bad decisions, but not that one.
That's great.
Yeah, I lucked out there.
Yeah, man. You know, and you're living in New York?
Really good at her job. I'm in.
She's a casting director?
She's a casting director. And she's in cast. She's also a producer. So now we're in New York. We're in Queens. And
what part?
Sunnyside.
Oh, yeah.
We always, like, we have, you know, like, at some point we want a little place upstate to try to, like, you know, I start talking about it like George from Jordan, Lenny, and Mice and Men. But,
yeah.
Yeah, so, is that a shotgun shell? I just noticed. That's cool.
It was sent in a weird package from a fan?
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I love shooting a shotgun, but like, yeah, she's, yeah. So that's been good, man. I've been really lucked out.
That's
there,
great.
You know?
And
took
so
on the project, that's funny. Yeah.
So you've just been laying into the stand up and I was going to say about animation, it does seem like there's a lot of room out there to really take interesting risks and not have the confines of reality. It's a creative opportunity.
I think people are just you know, that and people are making them. Like, it's harder now to, you know, like, it's harder to, I mean, you know, it's hard to make any, you know, everything costs so much money, and then you have, like,
Burr had a great success with his animated, and
That was a great show.
Someone wanted to build a show around me, like with cats and stuff, but I just was like, I don't know. Like, anytime, like I, you know, when I think about making television or pitching television, some part of my brain it's going to be like, that's going to be years. I'm not going to be able to do anything.
Right.
That's going to be a job.
I mean, the thing is, if you're doing VO, that's mailbox money, brother.
If you're what?
If you get a VO.
I do the bad guys. So we're doing the sequel.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm the snake. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
and DreamWorks is 8 minutes from here.
You're in and out a week.
It's the best.
That's amazing.
And people love it.
People love it, yeah. And I think it's just, you know, like you said, it's where I said, it's just hard to make, it's really hard to make stuff. Especially when you have like these heads of these giant networks who are like, Secession's great, but I can make 20 HGTV shows and get, you know, 3 times the profit for that.
Yeah.
And I understand, I, you know what, I understand that too. As somebody who, you know, like likes money and wish he had more of it, I understand, you know, like I understand that desire.
Yeah. So what is the name of the special again?
Dance Fatty Dance, you know, because that's there's some people in show business who turn everything down and are like, I'm waiting for my right moment. Me, I go down to the boardwalk, baby, and I dance for you. That's what I do. Get my dance shoes on, my shoe shine shoes. That's how I approach this fucking thing, dude. It's time to dance.
It was great talking to you, and
Thanks, man. You seem
very well. And,
thank you.
And
we'll appreciate it.
We'll make it clear again. Dan is sober. He looks healthy. He's got nice color. He's connected.
I'm compulsively taking
Kleenexes
out and putting them into little balls because I'm uncomfortable. But thank you, Mark. And you've always been very nice to me, so I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for talking.
There you go, Dan St. Germain. You can watch his special Dance Fatty Dance on YouTube. For his podcasts, tour dates, and more, go to danstgermain.net. That's danstgermain.net. Hang out for a minute.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
People, the new Ask Mark Anything is posted for Full Marin subscribers with my answers to your questions about the election, Brian Eno, mocktails, writer's block, moving to Canada, and more.
Will you actually move to Canada? I moved to Germany about 6 years ago after the first Trump presidency, and while it's not always easy, I still think I made the right call, especially with Trump being the nominee again. Well, look, you know, I've put in place a process that has not yielded anything yet to have permanent residency up here if I need it. I don't really know what that means for me in terms of really making a move. I do love America. It is my country. But I think the cultural ramifications outside of the political ramifications of authoritarianism, which is very possible, might be a lot to live with. So I'd like to have the option. I haven't made any decisions, but the reason I applied for it was to get some relief
and know that somehow or another I've got a legit way out. And you know, might be all rooted in fear, but I do think the cultural ramifications of authoritarianism and minority rule are already happening. And but for me to move to Canada would mean, you know, this was me doing something at a retirement age where I want to be, I want to have my own freedom and mind to exist in the world without a constant fear of my government or the people that inhabit my country. So I don't know to what degree it would that would have to escalate for me to be like, I got to get the fuck out of here. But that's really my concern, is to have the option on paper, and if I need to do it, as opposed to, you know, end up a refugee of one kind or another. To get that episode plus all the bonus episodes we post twice a week and every episode of WTF ad-free, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Here's some guitar from the vault. Monkey LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere. Cat angels everywhere. Did I say that already?